was a Catholic girl. Loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is December 19th, 2018, and if you're listening to this on a different date and time, 7 o'clock p.m., then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show or a podcast. However, if you're listening live, you can join the show. This is an Atheist Talk Radio show, and you can call in at 865-333-5937, 865-333-5937. I'm Doubter 5, and as usual, we have on the phone Wombat. Can you give me a sound check there, Wombat? Say hi.
It's the Wombat! New place, new host.
And he's
calling in at the right time.
Coming in live
Central
and clear.
Central Standard Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break, about 7:30. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in TV show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for over 8 years? Did you know that one back?
I want to talk about this. Yes.
You do.
It is not only my favorite Marvel movie, it's probably
Marvel.
My favorite Spider-Man movie of all time.
Movie.
I think what they did, for the guys who made this movie are the same guys who made the Lego movie.
No.
Spider with a Chance of Meatballs.
Nah.
I'm telling you right now, Into the Spider-Verse is the greatest Marvel movie of all time.
Probably.
Even the best animated theatrical movie.
Would not doubt
it. So good.
But it's not our Atheist Call-In TV show. That is a TV show, and it's broadcasting right now on Comcast Channel 12. So if you have a TV handy, switch it on, turn it over to Comcast Channel 12, and you'll be able to catch it about halfway through the show. It starts at 6:30 and ends at 7:30. However, we're hoping you'll hit record on that and listen to our show instead, or record ours and listen to theirs, either one. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program, and I've put several of them in their station rotation, so you never know when you're going to hear them, as long as you're listening to Wozo. Today we have a kind of a mishmash of topics, and I'm going to let Wombat jump on the... I think we're going to start off with street epistemology, find out what he's been doing lately, and how that's coming along.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure.
Go for it.
Okay, how's my quality? Am I coming in good? I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things I want to say.
Yeah, you sound good.
Awesome. So I did a talk for American Atheists in Cincinnati about a couple of weeks ago, maybe about last month. I really enjoyed that experience. And since then, I've been getting a lot of support with regards to getting invited talks about street epistemology. So I have one that's coming up in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And in Lexington, Kentucky, this will be the Kentucky Free Thought Convention that's coming up.
Uh-huh.
And then I have a couple of ones coming up in Nashville. I'll be talking at the Sunday Assembly in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
But my opportunities have been kind of blowing up with regard to speaking. And
cool.
Recently, I had some luck getting more mass appeal on YouTube. My subscriber count has now climbed to about 10,000 people.
Excellent.
Who've now watched my videos once a week.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really, really happy about the positivity I'm getting from everybody. Yeah. Who are really appreciating learning how to talk to people about these really, really hard,
yeah,
you know, topics that a lot of people think that they can't have conversations about, but it just turns out that there's just a really good enough.
You're talking about street epistemology?
Yeah.
Well, for those who may not be familiar with it and listening to the show, you want to talk about what epistemology is and then what a street epistemology is.
So, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Still there? Cool. Mm-hmm. So, epistemology to me is just, how did we come to figure out something? It's like, the technical term is the study of how we come to know things. Uh-huh. To me, it's just, how did you figure that out? Simple as that.
Yeah.
And I found, like, the way how people figure things out really dictates me how much credence I can put in terms of, do I believe this too, or do I think they need to have a better way of figuring that out? For example, they might tell me the weather that's going to be happening tomorrow, and they might say, hey, well, I read it in the weather report. And in my head, I could say, well, those tend to be pretty reliable. Yeah. But if they told me, hey, I found out because there's a talking frog underneath my pillow that I can see, and it talks me through what kind of cereal floats in my bowl in the morning, I'd be like, well, this is really interesting. I don't know if that's a reliable way, because we may have to test that out. The epistemology here.
Right. Or a farmer's almanac. Sometimes they're on and sometimes they're off. You know, they're not, you know, they print them up a year ahead of time. But anyway, I've always thought of epistemology as how we gain knowledge, how we come to knowledge. And
I like it. Yeah.
And knowledge is slightly different than belief in that, what would you say? Knowledge is a firm, what would you say that knowledge is as opposed to epistemology? Or just belief, I mean?
Oh, sure. And my definitions are 100% all truth for anything. But for me, knowledge is something that I can demonstrate to be true or something to be the case.
Yeah, or have good evidence for. Yeah.
But yeah, if I can demonstrate something, then I'm demonstrating knowledge of it. For example, if I said I know Spanish, you could test me on that.
Uh-huh.
If I pass the test, I've demonstrated that I know Spanish. If I don't pass the test, I haven't demonstrated that. Therefore, you can make the claim that I don't know Spanish.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Things that we can test are really reliable ways, or an epistemology, for example, to know if we know something.
Yeah.
And things that we can't test, like, for example, on that claim, like things that say, hey, there's a supernatural thing that exists. Well, we don't have ways to test supernatural things in a reliable way. So maybe then we don't have a way of confirming if that's true or not yet. And maybe we should work in the epistemology. And that's what street epistemology focuses on. It's not saying you're right or wrong. It's saying, do we have a good reason to believe
right.
it? And
how
oftentimes
did you,
when people realize...
What was the method that you arrived at your conclusion, at your knowledge?
Right. And if it turns out not to be reliable, people are much more willing to give up a bad method than a bad conclusion. If that sounds crazy,
no, that's
just
true.
Try it out. There's lots of videos on YouTube where people are realizing that they don't have a good reason to hold on to the belief and do one of two things. Either get a better method to get that belief or drop the belief entirely until they find a good method to get them there.
Uh-huh.
And both of those things are good options, are good conclusions, because it forces us to try to find better reasons to believe what we want.
Yeah.
And,
like the reasons, like the rules for logic and reason. If you follow those rules, you can generally feel safe that you got a good result, and that the answer that you arrived at should be considered knowledge. If you follow all the rules, of course, there are quite a few rules of knowledge and logic, or reason and logic.
So
a lot of fallacies
now,
to fall into.
Sure, absolutely. I set up a Patreon account. Patreon is like this web host sharing sort of thing that, like, anyone who watches it can donate a little bit of money and it helps you at a month. My support's been really, really great. I just crossed $130 a month. That's not bad. And it's allowed me to get better supplies for my stuff around here. And now that I live so close to Nashville, I'm definitely going to be going around that city and doing lots of talks around that area. In fact, I just went to the Reddit feed and asked for good places to set up. And everyone there was so great, and they came up with a lot of different places. I even talked with a restaurant manager who wanted me to set up in front of his place. So this is going to be something that's going to be really cool for the next year. And I'd love to see where this goes come 2020.
Yeah, one of the things that I have, one of the problems I have when I want to set up a table or something and talk about atheism is I have to rely on public places. And sometimes even there they have certain rules and stuff. But if you've got a benefactor, if you've got a merchant that will allow you to set up in front of their store, that's half the battle right there.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking, like, maybe setting up in some, like, public parks as well.
Uh-huh.
I like places where people are, like, pensive and, like, willing to sit down and talk to you for a while.
Right.
So,
and they're there because they have time to be there and do things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Exactly. I have a friend who wants to do his SC at an airport, like when the terminal is getting ready to fly out. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I don't know. They have the perfect excuse to walk away. Like, excuse me, I have to go to Cairo. Like, so you got to pick up in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's it for street epistemology for me. I thought maybe we can go straight into the topic that we had come up with just before we were ready to air.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah, the game.
Okay, so I don't know about you know a lot about this game, but
I've played it. I played it.
What? Get out of here.
Yeah, the older version, not the newer one, not the new game.
Okay, so there's a game called Assassin's Creed, and it takes place in different time periods. They try to be as true to the time period as possible, and they've gotten better as they've gone on. Now, the latest one that's come out takes place in ancient Greece. Why is ancient Greece important? Well, it's where philosophy really, it's like the birthplace of modern philosophy as we know it.
Yeah.
The side of Socrates.
Or at least Western philosophy. Right. Let's not forget Eastern philosophy.
Absolutely. Western philosophy, Western politics, Sparta, the spikes of Athens. There's so many great things. Modern medicine, the Hippocratic Oath. Like, there's so many great things that have come out of ancient Greece in this time period. In, like, roughly about 200 years. Where it's just really great to immerse yourself into that history and figure out things that are going on.
Uh-huh.
When I say it's true to life, they have these, I mean it. Like, you can see the temples where people worship, like, the Greek gods.
Right.
All the way from, like, Aphrodite, you have Zeus, you have Hercules. They pronounce the names with, like, actual Greek accents. So it's kind of hard, like, getting back to the American sense of things. But it's a really cool game where you can, like, play, you're on a ship. You do a couple of missions, and then you walk into a city and you see a bunch of people like shouting in Greek, ancient Greek, in ancient Greek.
Uh-huh.
And you like walk past it and you realize they're all praying to like this giant marble statue. And in your head, you're like, whoa, this is really bizarre. Because in my head, I've never taken these guys so seriously to actually see people worship them in public. Yet these guys are doing it in this game, in this simulation. Where they're doing it absolutely seriously, and I just find so many common ground with the way how we do our prayers. Like, for example, like when 9/11 happened, I remember holding hands in front of like a giant cross with people at my high school, and we would do public prayers. Or like
gather at the flag ceremonies at school.
Sure, flag ceremonies at school. There's like, if you ever seen Hadith, which is like an outdoor prayer that Muslims do in congregation, there'll be a bunch of carpets on the ground, and we'll all be pointing towards the temple, Mecca, and praying all in unison with each other. I'm like, whoa, to see this done so earnestly on beings that I know aren't real, but yet I can still enjoy as just a spectator, seems to be a really cool line. And it draws an interesting question of like, as an atheist, how much?
Yeah.
Can
so
I
you're
enjoy
saying
it?
You enjoyed it as a performance art kind of thing or a social art?
Well, I mean, I participated in it.
No, did you?
Like, yeah, one of the guys were like, "Hey, we're trying to worship like the god of the hunt, Aphrodite, or something like that, or like Jennifer, whatever her name
the
was,
the god of love."
And and they're like, "We need some wreaths, we need some oils, we need some leaves, and we need like an animal to sacrifice. Can you get those for us?" I was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So I'm going out in the woods, I'm getting oil, I'm getting the leaves, I'm getting the plants, and the whole time I'm like, I don't actually believe this, but I'm really enjoying being a part of this, and I don't want to make those people disappointed.
Right.
And it's just this weird thing where it's like, where do you draw the line between, so like last week.
Yeah, were you going to kill an animal just for them to, or bring in an animal just for them to sacrifice to a statue? You know, that type of thing.
Sure, why not? I killed so many people in that game.
Oh, and the game.
Yeah, it's not even a big deal. But I guess to vicariously enjoy this being a part of ancient Greece as authentically as possible, I love doing it as part of like the educational experience. I find like that's totally good. As long as I'm not causing harm, I guess I would say causing needless harm, because that virtual goat doesn't know what's left or right. I think I'm totally fine. But this is like a real-life situation. Maybe if I was teleported back there and there's a guy being like, hey, we need you to bring these things and maybe a couple of goats to throw some water. Maybe I'd be a bit more hesitant. You have a good point there. Maybe that would be something that's probably a pause. And maybe that's where I would draw the line. But I feel like there's a lot of things that we can stand to enjoy when we know we aren't causing any harm, but we have a chance to learn about another culture and as close to a one-on-one experience as possible, even right. if we know that we don't believe everything that yeah. culture believes.
Yeah, but the problem with that is when you base your beliefs on spurious knowledge or knowledge that you didn't come by through logic or reason, then it can lead you to strange and unexpected conclusions. Like in northern Egypt, in the Library of Alexandria, what is it, about 15, almost 2,000 years ago, I guess. It existed around the time of Christ, before and after. But the people inside the library were doing science. And mathematics and astrology and all this astronomy, excuse me, and all this stuff that the lay people outside were not allowed to know about. They did try to keep their information secret because of competition from other cities, things like that. Now, to the lay person on the outside, you know, it looks like magic. And there was an uprising of the Christians during that time. And they sacked the library, as many times that the library has been sacked and razed, to some extent, either on purpose or accidentally. But when you base your knowledge on methods that do not produce good results, then you have to expect bad things to happen.
I wonder what the goal is in that situation, though, because if my goal was to try to learn how medicine works or the best way to cure my village, and I started looking at, like, this Greek festival who was praising, like, a statue, I was like, I'm going to do that and see if it fixes my village. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that leading to a lot of problems. But if the goal was, I want to know what it feels like to be an ancient Greece person, or I want to know what it feels like to be a Persian back in this time period, or a Native American, because there have been games all based in those time periods.
Yeah.
I feel like there's
a lot of good information to be gained. Yes, I understand. And the experience itself is worthy.
I feel like that context is so important, really. Uh-huh. Like, I hear what you're definitely saying. Like, you definitely want to make sure you're going at it with the right intentions. Elsewise, you're leading yourself into believing potential woo, to put it nicely,
right.
Using really, really bad methods to get there.
It would be the equivalent of joining maybe a Holy Rollers or a Pentecostal church and not knowing what they do or how they come to what they do, and then find yourself presented with some snakes that you're supposed to hold or be the subject of an exorcism. You know, it looks nice on the outside. Everybody's all pleasant and smiling and happy to give you unconditional love in the name of Jesus, but then when you get down to the nitty-gritty, it could be very dangerous, to say the least, or at least very uncomfortable. And how far do you go, which is your whole purpose of this talk? Where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw that line? Because there are a lot of churches that are happy to put on a really pleasant, you know, veneer,
and
smiles and hugs, and they know just when to make you stand up and when to sit down. I want to hug, I want to go around and shaking hands, and everyone in the congregation knows the first thing, and you feel like it's your family that you've always had, and everything's perfect.
Right.
And then
that's the lure.
You stay there just long enough to realize, huh, is this where the money's going? Huh, is there the relationships that are going on around here? Are these the standards that they have here? Is this what they want? Are these the expectations that they have for me? How do I get out? Oh, there's no exit plan?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you exit, you're shunned. You're no longer part of the community. Like, what if it came up that they found out that your son was gay? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You never know that kind of stuff up front. You know, they all talk about the unconditional love of Jesus Christ and the church itself and God. But they teach a us-them mentality that if you find that you're outside of that them, or if you're among the them and not in the us, that they can rise to that pretty quickly and with anger and physical abuse if you're not careful. I've read articles where people who were exorcised wrapped in blankets and they laid on them on stage and they suffocated them. I mean, there was no ill intent. Yes. But the child was suffocated during the procedure. So you just never know what's going to happen when you believe in magic.
I was thinking of something that I heard in, like, Scientology that kind of mixed what I've heard of Mormonism and a lot of forms of Christianity, especially even Catholicism, where they introduce you on the basic concepts of the religion at front, which is love, peace, and harmony is good, pain, misery, sadness, bad. Come here and enjoy love, because all we are really important about is love.
Right.
But then you start getting into the narratives as you increase your trust with the church, and the church begins to trust you more. And they start telling about the narrative, like Joseph Smith, for example, or about elders and how they own planets, or how your spirit was already alive in heaven, and then it came back down to you in another body, and all you're doing now is going through the trial of making sure that you can come back to God, who lives on another planet, who's exactly like us, but is white, and it doesn't like black people.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you look into the books of Revelation, the books that they never talk to you about, you know, like your standard pastor, you know, preaching on the Sunday school.
Right.
Like, those and, used to be the books that they wouldn't tell people about.
And
they
were
unfolding. Oh, go for it.
And they instill these, you know, you've heard me talk about religious hooks into the children. You know, hooks like the belief in an afterlife, belief in soul, belief in sin, belief in heaven and hell. These are hooks that you put into your children at an early age that then other people can manipulate those children using those hooks. And I've made a very short video and put it on YouTube. So if the listener would like to watch it, like I say, it's very short. Just go to YouTube and type in religious hooks, and you'll see what I mean. People don't realize that they're doing it, and they actually think that they're doing good, of course, because they're passing their religion on to their child, but they don't realize they're putting them in jeopardy.
Yeah, and that's the most nefarious hook of them all. It's where people think they're doing the right thing, but they're actually doing a really, really horrible, detrimental thing that will take generations to go away.
Right.
Or at least one good conversation, one good 5-minute conversation.
Yeah. But still, even
start teaching some good.
Right. Even if you have the conversation and your rational mind understands that it's not verifiable or even true, it will take decades for your emotional knowledge to catch up to it. You'll still wake up worrying about hell in the middle of the night, even though you've been an atheist for 10 years. You know, it's that programming that you've got to get rid of, as well as the logical reasoning part of it.
Like, I can tell you right now, I got a new job. It's a really great opportunity. But I was really happy to go to, not because my last job was bad, but some of the managing practices were things that I didn't find agreeable. And so I still have nightmares. Almost basically, like, just like unpleasant dreams of still being underneath that degree of management. Anything that, even though I know I'm still in like a much better place now, and in fact, I'd be my boss's boss at this point. But I still have that emotional, you know, thing. And even when I transitioned, it still took me like a good 6 years or so just to be completely comfortable, not only with the concept of like calling myself an atheist, but being at peace with the concept of not knowing and being fine with that as an answer or at least a position.
Yeah.
Intellectually honest position.
And even now though, sometimes your emotional subconscious will throw you a curve and you don't realize or you don't know it's coming, and all of a sudden you hit it. Of course, you're able to reason it away. It's not really a problem after several years. But at the same time, those religious hooks are still there subconsciously, and you have to deal with them. It's a lot of harm that religion has done.
Sometimes you get sour hooks that are like, I love God, I love everybody, but I also don't believe in evolution. Or like, I love this, I love that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't believe in transgenderism. I think that's just, I think we have men and women, and that's where how God made us, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you'll get weird little kicks and snitches and like little catches and stuff like that. So you got to be careful where you draw that line. I understand. So, like, that whole idea of like, hey, I just want to throw myself into this situation and learn as much as I can about this particular culture, that's my goal. If you do that in certain circumstances, it could be pretty dangerous. You might find yourself in a cult. So you got to have that line drawn. And I guess for me, it was,
especially
for me, at least with a video game, I'll go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say, especially a young person, are easily drawn into cult-type organizations. So just be aware.
I think people
aware.
Want community.
Yeah, usually if a person is self-confident and a mature person, they can see it coming generally and know what's going on and back out of it and get out and say and be able to enforce their decision to leave. But a young child, we're talking anywhere from teens to mid-20s, may not be able to have that kind of confidence to leave a group once they start putting pressure on them to do certain things they don't want to
do. Right.
Yeah. And
it's a classic salesman too. It's like when you walk into a store and the salesman's like, hey, can I help you? And they want to stick with you the entire time. Because it's harder to just walk out of the store not buying anything if that guy never approached you in the first place. So they're trying to build communities. And the weird thing is, we love communities as just being human beings. It's like intrinsic to our nature to
right.
be social.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone can provide that to us, especially if we're in a point where we don't feel like we have a social group, like say we just moved, like say you're in my space,
right.
Groups will reach out to you and you feel like, I'll at least try them out. Oh, this is pretty nice for the first couple of weeks. It's just love and peace and all that.
Uh-huh.
And you don't know where the hook sink in.
Right.
So you got to have those lines drawn and know what you're trying to get out of a group.
Yeah.
And be open to the idea of, hey, I'm only here for X, Y, Z, and those could be great things, but beyond that, that's where I've drawn the line.
Right. And you've got to be able to stand up for it. You can do it, but then some people will either bully you into continuing or just sweet talk you into it. You have to know where to draw the line and be able to draw the line and back it up.
I'll tell you one last quick story before we hit our bottom of the hour real quick.
Uh-huh.
That Assassin's Creed game, one of the missions, this is such a great game, by the way, 10 out of 10. One of the missions is you're teaching a class. You're teaching a little school class in Spartan, like kind of little Spartans, the story of Perseus,
yeah.
Perseus in like American accent.
Yeah.
And you have to know the full story of that folklore. But when I was teaching the class, I didn't know the story of Perseus. I was like, I know he fought Medusa, and he like cut off her head or something like that.
Really?
But I don't remember like the details for it. So like I'm like basically just like BSing my way through the class,
yeah.
And then realized that the kids know that I don't know what I'm talking about. And I felt terrible, so I turned off the game. I opened up Wikipedia, and now I'm studying the folklore of Perseus from beginning to end. And then I go back to the class, and I still messed up a couple of things, but I went back and studied it again, and then went back to teach the class the full story nonstop, no problem. And I'm like, this game is making me enjoy
learning.
In a really great way, and I'm learning a lot.
Yeah.
And
as long as I
know what I'm learning, I think I'm great. Yeah, it's a really good game.
Yeah.
Oh,
people talk about the missed potential of gaming. Hell, that's a very good potential for the game. And I hope it catches on. Okay, we're at the bottom of the hour, so let me take a break here. You're listening to WOZO's Radio 103.9 LP. We're live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is December 19th, 2018. We're going to take just a minute and play a song. And since it's December 18th, I'm going to play The Atheist Christmas Carol by Vienna Tang. It's a very pretty little piece. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. There we go.
Welcome home. the heart, of feeling the full weight of our burdens. It's the season of bowing our heads in the wind and knowing that we are not alone in fear, not alone in the dark. Don't forget, I love, I love, I love you.
Listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is Doubter 5 at Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville. Let's talk about the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 16th year. ASK now has over, nearly 900 members. I think it was 898 the last time I looked. And you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Just go to that site and you'll have all the information about the meetups. Or you can just come to a meetup yourself. We usually meet at the Barley's Taproom and Pizzeria in Knoxville's Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. And if you live in Knoxville, if you don't live in Knoxville and you still would like to go to a meetup but can't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville, the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. Go to rationalist.org for more information. Then there's the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. Excuse me. They only meet once a month, though. It's on the fourth Sunday, so that would be the one just before New Year's. And they're down at the World's Fair site in the International Building. Just go about church time on Sunday morning. Then there's the Atheist Call-In TV show we talked about. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it online at ctvknox.org. You can also find some archives of their shows on YouTube where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum, Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the TV show or the radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest. And that's it for the announcements. Where were we on our topics? talking about how far, yeah, where would you draw that line when you're trying out a new religion or just getting into a social group? Where do you draw the line?
Or appreciating a new culture and their beliefs.
Or playing a game.
Or just to enrich your own life.
Right.
Yeah, or playing a game.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking we're getting close to holiday season. There's a lot of different holidays coming up.
Uh-huh.
About a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, we just had Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to Walmart, and I would see people, you know, in, like, that I would recognize as Muslim families. They're all dressed up, specifically dressed in really colorful clothes, when it's Eid Mubarak. And I would say, hey, happy Eid Mubarak to them. And they'd look at me, and they'd say, hey, thank you very much. And they'd just go on shopping, and I'd feel good because it was nice to get that date right and everything, because I have friends who are Muslim, and I'm like, yeah, I might as well just try it out.
Yeah.
But I don't think I lose anything by wishing someone a happy holiday, particularly if it's something that they believe, and I can just, like, help them to appreciate the goodwill of, like, a community that, like, obviously I'm not a Muslim, they can look at me and they can tell that, but I'm welcoming to their culture, and I'm helping them out by saying, hey, we have a good time. And I think that's just like whatever, just a nice thing people can do to each other.
Right.
The line for that, I don't know if there would be one, but I definitely could say, you know, there might be some religions out there that could be a little more violent or
depends on how fundamental they are.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't go to, like, a guy who had, like, some fresh snake bites, and I'd be like, oh, maybe God will help you not get bit next in the future or something like that.
Yeah.
Or go to, like, an abortion clinic and say, hey, Jesus loves you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some really terrible things like that. So there's definitely lines you can draw in a lot of different scenarios. So
yeah.
I'd say we're in holiday season right now. Maybe it'd be good for the audience to know, like, what kind of holidays are coming up, and if they happen to recognize, like, a guy that might celebrate Kwanzaa or a Jewish holiday, Hanukkah, or the next approaching pagan holiday or a holiday in the Muslim calendar or in the Christian calendar, even if they aren't a Christian, go out of the way to make someone else feel a little bit more welcome in the world. I think that can help make the place that we're living in, called Earth, a little bit more pleasant to be
around.
Yeah,
more tolerant of each other, more inclusive. Rather than developing an us-them attitude, just make it an all us. That's what humanism does. A lot of people ask me, you know, if you're an atheist, what do you do for morals? And, well, atheism doesn't address morals. It just addresses one question. Do you believe in gods or not? But we do have a morality that's offered to us, which I happen to accept, and that's humanism. And if the listener would like to Google humanism, they can learn all about it. It's basically an emotional, spiritual, whatever stance that you want to take, where the what we do in life, it should be done to benefit mankind, and or each other, try to help us through that type of thing. So I recommend people would look up humanism and find out a little bit more about it.
I feel like what I love about humanism is that it takes away the idea of, how do I put it, rights for just one group of people, and really makes the issue, we're all in on this thing together. So anytime any of us gets marginalized, it's dumb, not because they're a minority group or that this is a group in power picking out a smaller group. It's because we're all the same people and we should treat each other the same.
Right. No matter the culture, the creed, or the color of your skin, anyway, we're all human.
Right. And it doesn't try to go out of its way to rationalize the injustice. For example, you could say, like, hey, there's, like, animosity between, a perceived animosity between white cops and black people who get arrested proportionately more than white people for the same nonviolent crimes.
No.
So we can say, hey, black people need their own special set of, you know, alarmist points of views and morals and or like outreach and programs, because this is white people villainizing black people.
Mm-hmm.
And you could definitely make that argument, but I feel like the corrupt humanism is, you know, whether it's like a woman that's being cheated out of her job, or a child being cheated out because he's capable, but they hire an older person instead, or a black person being treated unfairly by white cops, or the other way around. Uh-huh. The basis of it is that humanism only cares about, like, hey, if we're all treated equally, what position would you want to be in? Fairly, you would rather be in one than the other. And you see the injustice here? Like, it just mellows things out and says,
right,
hey, we're all part
it
of
gives
the same
us,
group.
It gives us a new focus. It gives us something that is common, that's something that unites us rather than divides
right.
us.
Right. And I feel like a lot of people don't like humanism in the sense that it's a little too general, but the generality is the point. It's the fact that we are all generally that could be the same person under the right circumstances, and because of that, we should treat each other with the same respect that we would give anybody else, considering the fact that we're all human beings. And I found like there's something really, really beautiful in its simplicity. And so, yeah, I would highly recommend people look up humanism, like some of the basic tenets yeah. behind it, because it turns out a lot of the laws that we have, particularly as we slowly get out of the religious perspective of how laws are made, mm-hmm. to what we have now,
right.
tends to be more in line with humanism than they are with
well, they do,
ideas.
Secular humanism particularly.
If
the listener doesn't have access to a computer, maybe not remember it later, I've looked up humanism, and it says it's an outlook or system of thought attaching prime importance to human rather than divine or supernatural matters. Humanists stress the potential value and goodness of human beings, emphasize common human needs, and seek solely rational ways of solving human problems. And I think one of the main things that it said right there, the goodness of human beings, most religions that I know of, especially Christianity, say, you know, you're born a sinful person. You're dirty and full of sin right out of the chute.
You deserve it.
You know, and whatever mm-hmm. happens to you, if you go to hell or whatever, you deserve it. And
right.
And that, to me, is the wrong starting spot. For evaluating humans, give them a little bit of self-worth, a little value, you know, before you chuck them out in the world, instead of just saying you're a darn sinner and send them on their way.
Give them some inalienable rights, as some would say.
Yep.
You know, I was thinking of, this is going to sound like a bit of a tangent, there's a really, really great movie that just came out called Into the Spider-Verse. It's the new Spider-Man movie. And one of the things that I love about it is it goes full on into this idea of parallel dimensions where there's other Spider-Man in other universes and they all come crashing together and they have to figure out a way how to get back to their home dimension.
Uh-huh.
And it's all riding on basically the capabilities of like this brand new Spider-Man named Miles Morales. His burden and his responsibility that he has to learn to take on, and it's such a great character piece. But it is one of those things where there are some people who take comic books as seriously, more seriously than religion. So I probably might be in the same boat.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it. Like, I probably know more. I don't take religion very seriously in the first place. And I will stand and argue with someone for hours at a time about, like, the conflict of, like, Batman versus, like, Superman and who might win in a fight and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, I would definitely take it seriously. But there's also, like, the idea of, I don't put it, where you draw that line in the concept of our movie characters, our comic book heroes, are very much what the mythological heroes used to be back in the day. Like, 400
oh,
BC,
yeah.
people were talking about Hercules as if he was our Superman. Like, the idea
right.
of, like, super strong humanoid character who goes around righting wrongs and helping people out, like, that is a, almost an aspect of human nature. It's like how we aggrandize
ourselves. Yeah, it's the hero story.
And
Jesus was set up as a hero in a hero story.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we have, like, this anthology of heroes that meet each other, and then maybe the story changes a little bit, and then it's just a new rendition, like a new story, and then maybe
right.
that changes a little bit. And through, like, this word-of-mouth story, these stories become larger than life, to the point where if people, like, start hearing about a different angle of a story that they hadn't been exposed to, they're like, that's not what happened, that must be a different person. And they're like, no, this is our person, how dare you, how dare you think he's different? We've been telling this story to our generations for years. So the beauty of Enter the Spider-Verse is you have all these people who are named of Peter Parker, but they are different people because they come from different writers in the comic book.
Yeah.
And so what we've managed to do in the comic book universe is just say, well, we all know that none of these people are real, but we know a lot of times invested in them. So what we'll do is just give them their own universe to play in, and they'll never cross with each other. But maybe they will in some like nice crossover events. And so what you have in this movie is a crossover event of all of these well meticulously made Spider-Mans, all Peter Parkers. So you got one that's like
there wasn't
noir, you got one.
Yeah, there wasn't a Dave Parker somewhere in a distant universe.
No. But then you also have Miles Morales, who's basically like a black Latino Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then you have like Gwen Stacy, who's like a female Spider-Man. Mm. And like all these things, and they all have like similar kind of similar background stories, like where Uncle dies and like they learn how to take responsibility seriously.
Uh-huh.
But it's just cool to see in a movie what religion has not been able to do. Like in a movie, it's cool to see in a movie that only took about an hour and a half and was really, really great and getting great reviews, what religion has been unable to do without bloodshed of millions, if not billions, of people for thousands and thousands of years. Just celebrate the idea of, listen, folklore changes over time, and different people have different ways of telling stories, and sometimes things get more popular than the others, and at least different renditions of characters that we all sort of know. And now we're just going to mash them together. And instead of it being like a fallout, you see all these Spider-Men working together for a common goal. And it's just this beautiful thing when you really see it in that kind of context.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's getting along despite the fact that they're different. I love that.
And they're working toward a common goal.
Yeah. And it's just really cool to see. I mean, there's no animosity between them. And it's just like, oh, you're a Spider-Man. That's cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, fans know one more than the other, but they're like, oh, they're all getting along with each other. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, talking about an evolving story, that's one of the problems that I have with religion is... no matter how enlightened or liberal the religion becomes, the books never change. There's always going to be somebody like the Islamic Brotherhood who want to take it literally and shame other people into doing the same because the book says that. And unless you are able to defend yourself against that type of bullying and social pressure, you're going to end up being dragged into it with everybody else.
And the failure of the book is that it's so stringent and unyielding in its own point of view that it doesn't compensate for the fact that people might take what it says literally true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if it really does tout itself as like a peaceful religion or a peaceful philosophy, without compensating for the fact that people might take that and use it for violence, it's just perpetuates.
And for those listeners out there, and for those listeners out there who are thinking that the Bible is just Ten Commandments, what's the problem? No, there are 613 commandments in there given by God. And Deuteronomy 28 says that if you don't follow those commandments that they give you, all 613 of them, that you will be cursed by God, brought so low that you will end up eating your own children. That's Deuteronomy 28. So be aware of that. So it's not really a good book. If you get down and actually read it, I've always called it the best-selling and least-read book in the world. Get it out, read it, and yes, this is an atheist telling you to read your Bible. Read it.
Right. Yes, and it's probably one of the most effective things that can make someone change their mind, to be honest with you. There's a book called Manual for Creating Atheists, which is really popular among street epistemologists, written by Peter Pagosian, and it's basically the first instructional ideas of like how to use street epistemology, or like asking people questions about their epistemology, and a way to make them think about their religion specifically. And what I found was the title of the book was a little unfortunately controversial, because while it does stick out, it makes it a very easy target for apologists to say, oh, look at these guys, street epistemology doesn't belong to everybody, it only belongs to atheists. And really, I think anyone should be free to ask questions regardless of whatever the religion religious background is. And it doesn't even have to even be just about religion. But so I found like the best, truest book that is the Manual for Creating Atheists is the Bible itself. And if you just read that book, not in the mindset that it was given to you by an all-powerful being, but in the fact that this is a book explaining how to behave, starting from chapter one.
Yeah. One of the things you got to keep in mind, is it was written by the preachers of those days. I mean, right. if you had a book written by Pat Robertson today, would you accept it as the Word of God? No, I hope not. But how many preachers are there out there today? And if they wrote a book, would you believe it? You know, but this was written by the preachers of 2,000 years ago, who were very superstitious and unknowledgeable of science. As a matter of fact, it was not a very enlightened age at all back when they wrote it. But read it with that in mind anyway. Don't read it as, you know, this is revelation directly from the creator of the universe.
I will say this about the town that I'm in. It's a pretty small town, and there's probably more churches than there are public libraries. So, yeah. Like, it's at the point where, or, like, even, like, pizza places or whatever. But, like, the path of my house, I can describe by basically telling you the name of the churches along the way. So I could, and it's funny how many of them there are. So it's like, you know, just take a left at God's Revelation and then turn right at the Prophecy of Jesus.
Yeah.
And then go straight along the Children of the Lord. Yeah. Until you hit, like, the gospel, the one true gospel, and then turn left on A New Hope. Maybe
right.
Mm-hmm. Like, it tends to be the idea of, like, hey, this message that was given to us by some all-powerful being is being delineated by so many different churches on different blocks,
yeah.
by so many preachers. Yeah. They're all telling a slightly different story, like these different Spider-Men, and none of them get along with each other. And one of them is supposed to be right, because none of them are telling the same story.
And they all set point to the other churches saying that all those people are going to hell. You know, you get these kumbaya effect from religious people saying, oh, it's very nice that you live in a very godly community with all those churches. Yeah, but you got to remember that they're all pointing at you across the street at the other people saying those people are going to hell. I mean, there's so much us and them in a community like that, it's not even funny.
I think we have a lot to learn from Spider-Man. That's what I'm just saying. Everyone should just take a break and go check out Enter the Spider-Verse. It's such a good movie. It's just all these different... It's really a pantheon of different variations of the same God, if you really want to think about it that way. All hanging out with each other, not having a problem with each other, all working towards the betterment of mankind, and realizing, hey, what's the real stake at stake? Oh, it's human society, it's people, people who care about teaching good values, and like... He's still dispersing back to their own homeworld. No, not so much. There's too much of a spoiler, but so it's just a good testament to show we can make better gods than the ones that we've been believing in our entire lives. So the ones that our parents have told us. Like, we already have better examples of people that value human worth more than the deities and our holy
offending a deity.
And maybe,
yeah.
Yeah, and maybe if that's the case, maybe we then, that's more of a sign of we don't need a book to tell us don't murder people, or a book to tell us don't steal, or be kind to one another, because we can come up with even better variations of people like that, who are not only more entertaining, but more personable and more well-rounded characters than these flat parables that we have in the story.
Right.
And maybe that would stick with us a lot better than... You know, these characters that we can misinterpret and do pretty violent things based on our interpretation of them. Maybe we'll be able to draw the line in a better place if we just let go of the stuff that our parents gave us.
Yeah. And use their logic and reason and empathy and compassion. That'll take us a good long way toward a good moral base that we could use to go forward.
I think we just need to let go of the, what do you call it, well-meaning lies. And be willing to embrace the fact that we're capable of coming up with stories ourselves, and we can come up with better ones too. So let's go for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Any last words? We're coming up. We've got about 3 minutes left.
Okay. So my YouTube channel is called Let's Chat. It is a really cool place where you can come and watch people talk about whatever they really strongly believe is true. It's not always about religion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like the last video I posted was a lady who just became a master gardener. And I didn't even know there was such a thing as a master gardener. She was really excited. She was talking to me about the credentials she has to go through, the classes she has to go through it, and how it soothes her and allows her to be a better person. I was just like, this is such a great story. Next week, I have a video either coming out that about a lady who has kids that are in their 30s and 40s, but she still sees them as her children. And she gives her, like, philosophy of when she'll stop considering them as kids and recognize them as her children, but as her adults as well. I think these are really cool ways that you can like learn how to talk to people, and I leave the videos out there for people to learn how they can get engaged with other people too, and learn that they can talk about anything with anyone.
Yeah, well, very cool. The website that I'd like to toss out there for my own work is digitalfreethought.com, and I've got a blog. I've got atheist songs on there, and matter of fact, I've got archives of this show on there. We've got, this is our 124th show. If you like this show, then you can go out there and listen to the, all the others. We are currently broadcasting a podcast on Stitcher, and I've recently been told that we're also on iTunes. So go to iTunes and look for digitalfreethought.com, or just Digital Free Thought. And, of course, I have a book on Amazon called Atheism, What's It All About? If you're interested in reading anti-apologetics for Christian apologetics, that would be a place to go. And I guess that's about it. My final thought, as usual, is don't worry about hell, because everybody's going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about is when they prove that hells and heavens and souls are real. And in 2,000 years, they haven't. And this is Larry Rhodes and Wombat. Say bye, Wombat.
Bye, Wombat.
And we'll see you next. Hey, go ahead.
I'm looking at it on Stitcher right now. It's called Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, Atheism Talk Show, 103.9
Wogo
LBFM.
Yeah,
check it out on Stitcher.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so we'll see you next week at 7 o'clock, same channel. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.